you.
Well, thank you very much. I just got through assessing a case that was the stickiest, muddiest, doggonedest, bogged-downest case that Hosie London had. And I did an assessment of the case, find out how I was getting along. And one of our staff auditors has been working with this case, and he's been running communication processes on the case. And I'll be a son of a monkey if the fellow isn't reading clear. And I can't believe it. And I tried to mess up the needle. And the only way I could mess up the needle was kick him into some PT problems. And in view of the fact that he still wasn't satisfied with existence, it could be better, I had to tell him that we would shoot him on toward OT. He's reading messed clear, not theta clear. But I think this is fascinating. This is utterly fabulous. This fellow had a needle that nobody ever could have read. Nothing ever could have happened. Any process you ran on this fellow was just like pouring water on a duck. He thought it was fine, but he never improved. And yet I think he has only had here under Hosie, HGC auditing now, he's had 125 hours from the last time I looked at him as a totally hopeless, no advance case. So 125 hours from that point, and he's flickering right around mess clear. And that was overt withhold, straight wire on self. Another process that wasn't particularly germane. And then the communication processes ever since on generalized terminals. And I've taken him around and I put him back on particularized terminals just to clean up his environment. By the way, his financial condition, just 90 days ago, was so crucial that he was trying to borrow enough money to buy a musket to put the muzzle in his mouth, you know, practically. He had to make a very large number of pounds, a tremendous number of pounds, by the end of summer. And in some mysterious fashion, the amount of pounds he'll have to pay at the end of summer has now dropped by 4/5. He only owes 1/5 of the money he owed. Mysterious, isn't it? His personal concerns are straightening out and so forth. Well, this is a hopeless case. So, of course, I know your case is worse than that. There's hope for you, too. All right, now we're going to talk about fundamental case entrance points. We're going to talk about case entrance points. We're going to talk about clearing and case entrance. Where do we enter a case? The basic rule of auditing, it is this, and no other than this. You find something the case can recognize or have a reality on, or in short, can do, and you improve that ability. Now, that's fundamental. That's fundamental that you all know and you never use. You look at what you can find needs improving in the case and start working on it. But that isn't the way it goes, and there's where you miss. And there's where PE foundations miss, and HGCs miss, and field auditors miss, and they miss and they miss until the air is full of auditing commands and the streets are empty of clears. Why? Because it's the case entrance point that the PC can enter, not the auditor. Now, where do we start case entrance? Case entrance is actually started not in an auditing session, But I started walking down the street or sitting in a living room or in a cinema or somewhere. And somebody hears about Scientology. And hears about it in such a way that he wants to know more about it. And you have entered case. That's case entrance point. Sounds silly, but that is the case entrance point. There isn't any earlier case entrance point than that. And if that one is not done successfully, nothing else happens all the way up the line. Girl's brought in with a scruff of her neck by her husband, slammed down in an auditing chair. Auditor's supposed to audit her because if anything's wrong with her. She doesn't go anyplace. Oh, today we probably do something for her. But everything that we did was to bring her up to a point where she wanted some more of it. And that would be her case entrance point. Actually, up to that time, we're just trying to establish some communication. If you think you can manhandle a person into sanity, look at all the nuts that have been manhandled. You see, it just doesn't work that way. You can't manhandle anybody into sanity. That is where psychiatry in the 19th century began in error, lived in error, and died in error in the early 20th. It doesn't know it, but it's dead. It's like the fellow said about the town. It's beautifully laid out, but they forgot to bury it. Now, they are trying to enter a case with total effect on the patient and no effect on self. So they go crazy very easily. They take somebody, chop him up, mince him up, fill him full of drugs. Bleh. We admit it's Russian, but is it effective? No, it's not effective. Truth of the matter is, the horrible criticism of these people is, do you realize that they do not worsen the case? They really don't worsen cases. Thetan just backs out if it gets too bad and goes the other way. They don't change a case in any way, really. A case can change to some degree while in psychiatric hands, but the psychiatrist didn't do it. Because he doesn't get the 22%, 22.5% that he is entitled to. He's actually entitled to 22.5% cure, you know. Any witch doctor gets it. Well, the psychiatrist gets less than his proportion. So he must be doing something else. He definitely must be doing something else that doesn't give him his percentage. All right. Now, you enter a case with violence, and all it does is back off. And backing offness forbids reachingness. You see that? And the only way you're going to make him well is getting to reach. Simple. It's so simple, nobody's ever looked at it. Therefore, the case entrance point is with the first tiny reach. The definition of a case starting up the line would be the first reach of the case. Now, thee and me get terribly baffled how we're going to get the public to do that tiny little reach. And each year, it becomes more and more and more difficult. Because the society itself, at this time, is dedicated to preventing anybody from reaching. The society's cure for everything is to prevent reaching. It's a political cure. Corn and games. All you have to do is sit there and we'll bring it to you. You don't have to vote anymore. Vote doesn't count much anyway. Don't reach toward the government. The government will walk right into your home and take away its tax. Get the idea? Entertainment? Well, the public mustn't reach for entertainment. That's silly. It's silly. Why don't you sit in the living room and it's all brought to you? You see? Don't reach. If anybody starts reaching, they say he's obstreperous. As a matter of fact, most of the manuals in some nations, which are dedicated to the handling of the, quote, psychological, I don't know why they use these 19th century words, psychological aspects of disaster relief or civil defense, demand that any person in authority who sees somebody active trying to get something done about it must corral and incarcerate the person at once because he's being active. He's trying to do something about the disaster. So a spontaneous doing anything about the disaster must be at once discouraged. Now, of course, I think the American version, which actually states this, was probably written by one of the better paid members of the Russian General Staff. And I think that the Russian book that says this was probably paid by one of the higher members of the American General Staff. If they could just get everybody to lie down totally while they were being bombed, then there wouldn't be anybody surviving, and the end goal of all militarism and politics would have been reached. There'd be nobody left alive if they could just make this totally successful. Now let's look at that. Wherever we see somebody reaching in the society, we are going to see criticism. There are only two things you can do wrong. There are only two crimes. All crimes are under these two subheads. One is being there and the other is communicating. Actually, they come under the single subhead of communicating, because you have to be there to communicate. But those, all crimes come under those two headings. So people, when they start reaching, expect to be punished. If they reach just a little bit, they'll start to be punished. Hence their critical statement about auditors, about clinics, about organizations, and so forth. Oddly enough, most of the yickle-yackle that you hear critically about auditors and about small organizations or central organizations are actually prompted from the feeling that people, they're liable to be punished. There must be something bad. There's somebody going to be punished, and they sort of start postulating it because they are reaching for something. And reachingness and punishment go hand in hand. If you want to get your knuckles wrapped, just write to some large organization amongst man and propose something. I did something the other day. Not even my own office knows it was a gag and an experiment, but offered to give a series of science fiction lectures in the local planetarium, knowing they wouldn't be able to stomach this, even though it had jammed the joint. Local planetarium is talking about the stars. The stars? Aren't they beautiful? When man's interest in the stars right now is we can't reach here, let's go up. And there's terrific numbers of science fiction fans in the country. And we could just load that place up to the rafters, you see, by simply showing different aspects of the heavens as they would appear from different positions. showing such things as maybe a crash on a black planet. He let the whole audience crash on the black planet, you see. Going into an activity of a meteor shower coming straight toward a windshield. Showing how it would be to start doing a perihelion around a sun and start going through some of its outpouring gaseous flames. Closer and closer and closer. Well, naturally, this would key in the living daylights out of most any audience. You'd have to have 4 or 5 trained nurses and 12 auditors on hand every show, wouldn't you? It is actually a good gag. I was going to propose then, you see, that every time you gave this and the people have fainted and screamed and so forth, you said, now, if you cannot sit here and watch this sort of thing comfortably, you can see how man will never get to the stars without Scientology. Thank you, you see, and just end the show. But having reached, with a rather decent idea, with no ramifications on it, why, of course, this thunderous big organization that runs the planetarium, you know, they thought, good heavens, somebody is reaching, you know. And they rapped the knuckles rapidly. I thought this was a terrible thing to propose. Very, 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 very sharp. Write somebody in charge of the post office sometime. Tell him how to handle the mail. And you're liable to get a very stern response. Now, if you write and complain, well, you'll get some mollifying letter. You know, we'll all take care of it, and you know it went into file 13. But to actually reach in their direction on something they consider a reach is almost never done. It's something they don't really see very much of, and they really slap it back quick. It's a very bad symptom. It's a symptom of somebody waking up. About the only thing they'll accept is a complaint. And people are conditioned that if they're going to do any reaching, it's got to be in complaining terms. And therefore, you see the odd phenomenon of someone hanging around you as an auditor or hanging around an organization for years doing nothing but complain. You know, complain, 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 complain. But they're still there, aren't they? Well, if you're so bad, or if we're so bad, why don't they go away? But they don't. That's their idea of reaching. And you should just treat it as such. I have treated it that way on a few occasions, and you would have been utterly amazed at the tremendous relief which came off the case. I've said to such people, well, thank you. Thank you very much. Your suggestion is extremely well taken. And they've all of a sudden realized that although they were only reaching covertly, that they really had reached. And they kind of back up and try to back through the wall at their back, you know, and try to back out the front door. And they're puzzled. Something happened. What they did was intend to reach, you see, but they didn't want you to find out. You get all this little diffidence of one kind or another about it all. Well, this diffidence of reachingness expresses itself in refusal or failure to invade privacy. People have a thing called privacy, and it must be invaded. Must not. Definitely not. You need search warrants, except when they don't have time to get them. And you need hunting licenses and so forth in order to have permission to reach, one way or the other. Invasion of privacy. There's a terrific social structure, which is built up all around this one thing of don't reach. And the more mechanized the society gets, the less value the individual man has, the less his help is needed, the more things are served to him. Eventually, he will be nothing but a spectator. He'd be a spectator that watches the machines. And I can see right now that people could get employment for just watching machines run. go around to a big corporation, tell them that you're a spectator. You watch machinery. And somebody's liable to hire you. You sit there and watch the machines go. They know this is a proper role that man will eventually fill. Well, now, man isn't in good shape if he's not reaching. If there's nothing to reach for. And if he's actively and continuously prevented from reaching, he winds up practically in the spin bin. Now, when they tell us that the air is all full of strontium-90, some people call it strontium-90, it bites them just the same. With falling out, and with dirty bombs and clean bombs and dirty talks and clean talks by the politicians and animosities and re-animosities and recriminations grade A, grade B, grade C, and the selected varieties going on all the time. A world of tension and unrest and all that sort of nonsense and rot. Newspapers all full of crime, 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 crime. Crime, crime, political crime, crime, crime. Unrest, unrest, don't reach. Do you realize people get murdered on the streets every day? Well, that's the mission a lot of newspapers try to give us. You realize the streets aren't safe, that the world is practically packed with nothing but criminals. And so forth. Well, we get robbed once in a while, sort of at long distance. But isn't it a funny thing that, as a matter of fact, in the past year or two, I've only seen one robbery. And the robber was being jumped on by four pedestrians. He very much resembled Crepe Suzette just before it burns. I don't know that the world is dangerous because of all the crime in it, but it was certainly dangerous for that criminal. Quite remarkable. He shouldn't have done it. Well, I don't know. Factually, the odds are very much in favor of a virgin with a bag of gold being able to walk from one end of this world to the other at the present time and never be touched. It's a fact. That's a fact. According to newspapers, that isn't true. And according to TV, all that ever happens is the police shoot at criminals, and the criminals shoot at the police, and the police shoot at the criminals, the criminals shoot at the police. Now, the air at all times is full of ricocheting steel jackets. That doesn't look to me like the environment I live in. But if people don't live in that environment, how do they know? If they're sitting home looking at the environment, and the environment is brought to them with their daily paper, their television set, their radio, and all other means of communications, if that environment is the only environment they have any acquaintance with, wouldn't they believe this to be true? They sure wouldn't reach. They wouldn't reach worth a nickel. Now, the society is working hard, internationally, locally, to teach people to keep their hands to themselves. And you're working very hard to teach somebody to twitch his little finger in your direction. How do you get him to do it? You see, it's no sense trying to do less than to get him to twitch his little finger, at least in your direction. Because he hasn't reached. He isn't there, as far as you're concerned, until he does reach. And if he doesn't reach toward you, he hasn't started. And if he hasn't started, unfortunately, you can't directly start him. I think probably in the next 25, 30 years, probably all the names will disappear. People will be known by A62-N. And here's A62-N, and you say, well, you'd better reach now. For what, he will say. Where, how? And you try to tell him what, where, how. He said, I don't know, it's pretty adventurous to me. I'll just sit here. I'm not going to do any reaching, thank you. It's almost a flat thing. Now, about 50 years from now, you'll say, come on, A62-N, reach. And he'll say, he didn't even ask a question. See, it'll go downhill that far. Well, you're all right, and you can get him to reach, and you can persuade him to reach, and you can get him to walk in your direction, but all by more or less presented mechanisms. You're giving him something to reach toward or something to reach to. So your task in getting him to reach in the first instances is giving him something to reach for or to. Therefore, it has to be a reality. Now, unfortunately, his observational ability is so poor. His observational ability is so very, very poor that he cannot see a concrete reality even when presented to him. Oh, I had a big broadcast outfit very, very short time ago talk to me in this wise. They're always coming around saying, we have a lot of glaring lights we want to throw in your face and a lot of cameras we want to turn on, and you're supposed to answer up smartly when the interlocutor asks the questions, but you're not supposed to answer any questions until you were asked questions. And here's the questions we want to ask, and the questions are, and it'll have something to do about rhinoceros at the North Pole as far as Scientology is concerned, you know. And I say, well, I don't think very much of that show. That seems to be an awfully poor show. I have a much better idea of a show, and why don't we do this? And right away, I've reached, they disappear. The finest method in the world I know of making them disappear is just to tell them that, and then give them a good idea, you see, for a show, something like that. Not force it at them, but just show them that you've reached that much, and they know that you're striking at them. Now, their idea of a show was being presented, and they said, and you have some tests, don't you, that you think represent people's reactions and personality. I said, I think represent them. Well, as a matter of fact, I never thought very much about them, but the world of psychology demonstrated that these tests did vary from person to person, and we show that we can vary them in the same person. The ones you think show changes in people or improvements. You know, like an IQ test. Man, I looked at this fellow I was looking at and realized that this fellow, you could walk up to him with the sworn affidavits of the 100 finest jewelers in London that you were holding the Kohinoor diamond. You could show him the Kohinoor diamond, let him read the affidavits, let him handle and look at the Kohinoor diamond, and the fellow would go away and say, what do you know? I didn't want to know anything about mice. This fellow was strictly... Where was he? There was no acceptable, presentable reality. And there's where you get your heart broke. The PC. What is a presentable reality to this PC? And you go around with a social agreement that everybody's sane and everybody can see and everybody can think and everything is real to everybody, and you're going to come a cropper because you're doing an overestimation of the case. And if you're going to get somebody to reach, you've got to get him to reach for something he considers real. And you could get anybody to reach if you could find out that it was real to him. Anybody'd reach if it was real to him. So your contest is not how to get ads in coaches and trams, undergrounds and subways and buses. That's not your problem. You ever notice the people that rode on them? Now, by golly, it's quite interesting that you could probably put two or three gold pieces in one of those tram ads, and they'd probably ride back and forth, up and down the line for 25 years without anybody ever reaching up and picking one up. They'd fall out and roll into a crack before anybody picked one of them up. They just don't look. I used to have a wonderful gag. I've mentioned it before. I used to have a wonderful gag in New York City. Every time I get to New York City, I pull the same gag. It's irresistible. Take a pretty girl, you see, and I walk her down Broadway to 42nd Street, and I show her how New Yorkers never see anything. And I tell her, as we're walking down to the corner, 42nd and Broadway, the busiest crossroads of New York, certainly. They say of the world, but they haven't been out of there. Man, they should be down on the in the middle of Rome during rush hour. Anyway, tell a girl, New Yorkers never notice anything. They never see anything. And she says, well, how do you know, you know? And I say, well, you could stand right here on this corner and give somebody a very loving kiss, you see? Give them a very endearing kiss, and nobody would even break stride or stop or glance sideways. She says, I don't believe it. She's had it, just like that. It's a wonderful gag. Yeah, I recommend it to you. But the point of the matter is they don't look. They don't see it going on. Totally unreal. Now, your problem varies for given communities or nationalities or, more fundamentally, individuals. What is real enough to them to prompt them to reach? Because they will reach for what is real to them. Therefore, you begin a case with getting somebody to reach. And you define very definitely what they will reach for, which is that which is real to them. That they will reach for. This is not difficult. This is not difficult. All it requires is sheer ready genius on your part. That's all. And if we can say what it requires, you can match up to it. It requires imagination. Now, if you go around peering at people, trying to find out what they will reach for, you're going to get nearsighted. You just try to rack up a series of experiences, vary your conversation until somebody reaches. And then, for heaven's sakes, don't put it on automatic and say, well, they reached. What do you know? Well, I've varied my conversation, they reached. No. Note what they reached for. And one of these days you will know all about it. You'll know exactly what to say to get people to reach in any given strata, community, or nationality. Be an interesting thing to know, wouldn't it? The only person that's going to learn it's you. Because if it's not real to you that this is the case, you won't use it. All I can tell you is how to find it. You can get almost any person, not unconscious, to reach. You will see a sudden intensity of interest and a question. And his interest is expressed in just that way. A sudden interest and a question. And when he asks the question, regardless of what it is, he has adventured up to his first reach. It's hardly worth a reach. You could hardly call it a reach, but he's beginning to. Got the idea? He's trying to find out what he is reaching for with that question. And with some people, it will be an insulting question. And it is very peculiar. But if I can get somebody to ask me an insulting question, he's dead, he's had it, because he's been made guilty of an overt act, And I just play the overt act motivator sequence from right straight on through. Next thing you know, he's saying, audit me. He can't help himself. It's very funny, but some people, as I said, reach with complaints. Their first little trigger in your direction will be with a complaint. Some is with just a plain insult or a nastiness or something like that. But if the thing to worry about is no response at all, then start worrying. Some famous figures in public life have had this phrase, "It doesn't matter what they say about me as long as they say something." Various figures in public life have had this witticism attributed to them. Amongst them was Death Valley Scotty. And Death Valley Scotty was a Western character of one kind or another, and he had the United States talking about him for years and years and years. There's no telling what Death Valley Scotty was going to do next. But whether he was being damned or praised or anything else didn't matter to him as long as people were reaching in his direction. Now, you'll notice that the amount of press the criminal who was about to be hanged gets, and that sort of thing. Well, what causes all the people to reach who line the avenue as the funeral of the criminal about to be hanged or who was hanged goes by? What's this? What can they reach for? They can reach for a hangman, or some thought of a hangman, or the sadness about hangmen, or the brutality of law, or the horror of having a horrible malevolent state that kills people around. They can reach for something. There's some reason they're there. They will go out and present themselves. Quite different than sitting home and reading about it in the paper. Quite different than sitting in front of a TV set, you know. I think they're probably, the next stage on TV is they're going to have an anesthetizer that goes with every set. I don't think they're doing a good enough job of it just now to please them. Every once in a while, one of the characters in the play, the policeman or somebody like that, will turn around and squirt an atomization of anesthetization at the audience or something of that sort. They work out something. Those people are reaching, those people who go out and present themselves. The nation to worry about is the nation that has stopped reaching. That's the one to worry about. That's the case to start worrying about. Our contest in a research line has been a very specific one, and that is to have processes so designed that they would continue the reachingness of the PC up to the point where that reachingness was totally effective. Now, that's been quite a trick, and it's a little thread of processing that maybe has gone unnoticed. Any number of processes can do any number of things to people, but to continue the person's reachingness and to continue his course of processing and get him through to the ends of intensives and to finish up and ask for more processing until he's way up the line, and processes which at the same time get him up the line as well as merely interest him. That's been the trick. Along with that, by the way, I may mention in passing, are processes which got him up the line rapidly enough so that his environment couldn't knock him back what you've made him gain. That was the first hurdle, and that's all of the same bundle. How to keep a person reaching until he can reach, until his confidence in being able to reach is restored. Now, your next problem is how to handle a reach when it's reached. And right about that point, we don't want you being as goosey as some farm girl just because somebody reached at you. You understand me? If we've given a lot of thought to getting somebody to reach, now for heaven's sakes, let's not undo the whole thing by ducking. Saying, oh, you reached. How do you keep him reaching? That's your next problem. Not how to duck. How do you keep him reaching? Somebody says, well, what's this all about? See, the levels of skill of you, the Scientologist, depend on how much reach you need to go for broke. Somebody has to climb in your bedroom window and sit down on the edge of the bed and beg with you for hours and hours and hours to get you to process them because you wouldn't see them all day and you've been busy and all that sort of thing. Well, I'd say that was a pretty lousy Scientologist. He just couldn't handle reach till it got to that magnitude. Then finally, why, maybe you break down, you know. All right, I'll process you. Now go away and let me get some sleep. You know, that's sort of a response. All right. Maybe that requires that intensity of reach. But how about the kind of reach of somebody who says to you, what is this? What does Scientology mean? Two luckless telephone men the other day asked me that question. They were actually lucky. They asked it. But that was enough reach. See, that was enough reach. I pulled them right straight on through the knothole. Proved them conclusively that their whole business of communication was a common denominator of resistance. Bang. That was it. Scientologists study communication, study human communication. You're experts in this kind of communication, you know? I mean, communication of wires, that sort of thing. Well, Scientologists are experts in communication. You find communication is a common denominator of all activity and so forth, and you're right in on the ground floor of practically life and business, aren't you? We never looked at it that way. What you say is right. That's right. That's right. There is a coordination between communication and life, isn't there? Yeah, so what Scientology makes analyses of these situations. So next thing I know, well, have you got a book on it? Where can I get a book on it? So here we go. All I did was compare this person's environment to a facet of Scientology, show him that there was a coordination between his main interest in Scientology, and show him that there was an agreement there. The agreement occurs, it exists, it is, therefore it's very safe to reach those. So he's used to reaching to telephones, which is communication, so therefore it's very safe to reach Scientology because that's communication too. See, it's safe to reach. So, our next lesson is whatever you do in handling it, show him it's safe to reach. By showing him there's an agreement between Scientology and what he does. What he does or thinks. Well, that's a broad trick, and all of us have used it one way or the other. We've established agreement. What is this agreement? The agreement is that Scientology is similar to what he is always reaching, so therefore it's safe to reach to it. Now, that's why you want the agreement, and no other reason. It is safe to reach. These fellows are habituated in reaching for communication activities and telephones and so forth. So if Scientology studies communication, it's obviously safe to reach communication. Of course, communication to these boys is, as far as communication is concerned, these are very alert men. But really, as far as people are concerned, it's what wall? One of them all of a sudden came up with a fantastic problem. And he said, maybe you could tell me why it is that during rush hour, one girl will start screaming and then that sets them all off. Oh, I said, yes, the phenomenon of mass hysteria, yes, very much in, well, in Scientology. Actually, we could look over and find out who would scream first, and we could actually either fix them up so they wouldn't scream or remove them. I said, something could be done about that. I said, but that's a very smart question. That took an awful lot of study. This guy, yeah, it must be pretty safe to reach toward this stuff. See? It agrees with what I'm doing, and it's safe for me to reach even into hysterical women. See? This is one of my basic problems. If he says it's one of his problems, he certainly considers it safe enough to have around. So your agreement line is backed up by what is it safe to reach for? he has to realize that Scientology is perfectly safe to reach for. Whatever you tell him about it, you reassure him about this. First, by it agrees with what he does reach for, usually, and by association, therefore, it's safe to reach for. Your next line is, what questions does he have that it answers? And there's where you should get in and pitch. After he's done a little bit of reaching, you had certainly better find out what questions he has, not just sit there and process him from there on out on what you've made your mind up to. Don't just go into conversation on what you've made your mind up to. You see, let's find out what questions this fellow has. Now, every man carries around, and every woman carries around, a set of basic philosophic questions. Is there life after death? And where did Agnes go after the car wreck? You know? More crudely and in more less enlightened areas, you'll find out somebody has begun the blasphemous question, well, really, is there such a thing as a hell? Is there really such a thing as a hell? He carries this question around with him, you know. He has questions. He has questions about life. And one of these days, why, I'll have to delineate these into a book called The Search for Scientology. And all it does is just list all the basic questions about life, you see, in non-philosophic terms. These things he could become aware of. He can become aware of the fact that there are problems and questions. He can become aware of that. And you must never overlook the fact that to most people, a problem is much greater than a gatepost. A problem is much more visible than a round white stone. That a problem is a person or something of this sort. And they might not be able to look at a girl, but they'd be able to look at a problem about girls. Might not be able to look at men, but they could look at a significance about men. And in view of the fact that problem contains one element which is almost across the boards. It isn't, but it's across the boards at the lowest one that we want to have very much to do with, and that's mystery. In view of the fact that every problem has an ingredient of mystery, you're bound sooner or later to hit pay dirt if you introduce problems. Sooner or later. Your role is not to be informative. That is not your role. Answer the question, yes, but keep him reaching. Answer the question, but keep him reaching. And he'll finally get there. What will he reach for? I've already said that people walk around with these basic and fundamental problems they've not been able to make much out of. You'd make a mistake if you told them more than, well, Scientology answers that. He said, what about life after death? Well, now, if you start going in about thetans and exteriors and how many feet back of a burial plot you have to be in order to... Oh, you're just going to bash him in, that's all. He's not going to respond at all. But the funny part of it is, you very often will not conceive of the illogicalness of a satisfactory answer. What that person will consider a satisfactory answer is so illogical that you yourself wouldn't even vaguely consider it an answer, and so you miss. And he says, well, tell me, you've been doing some research on the field of the spirit, you say. I understand Scientology. I say, I do the field of the spirit. The spirit really go to heaven? Does it really go to heaven? Really? Does it really? Does it really go to heaven? Does it? You look at him and you say, well, Scientology answers that. He'll say, thank you. You always feel you're being called upon to give far more than you have to. It's very remarkable what little thing will answer up something like that. Always answer. Always answer. But answer satisfactorily. And a satisfactory answer to this person who is just starting to reach may be so slight, so faint, and to you so illogical that you go wag every time you say, "What?" That answered his question. Now, I have a good joke on a staff member. Every once in a while, a person will take a totally illogical explanation, just in stride, and go along, smiling cheerily, totally satisfied. Staff member came in the office the other day, and I signaled the HCO reception office. And a communicator came in, asked me something, and went out. And the staff member says, she's going on chatting, wait a minute, she said, wait a minute. I didn't see you do anything. You didn't press any buzzers or... How'd you call him? And I said, I was drinking a glass or something, and I tipped up the glass, and I said, "See the bottom of the glass?" And I tapped it like that, put the glass down. Dad says, "Oh, I see," and went on. wasn't paying attention, you see. Here you feel you're called upon for a dress parade recital of the axioms, you see, from one to infinity. All you got to say to the fellow is, "Oh, yes, life after death. And, well, Scientology answers that, yes. Well, what is the answer, he might say. You say, "Well, after you get processed for a while, you find out the answer to it." "Oh, you do? Well, that's all right." Well, you wouldn't think that was a satisfactory answer either, but it is. Person's quite satisfied. He goes around telling people, "You know about life after death? Well, after you get processed for a while, you know about it." No, you got to throw him the whole works. You just got to sit down and answer all of his problems exhaustively from A to Izzard and straighten it all out and set him straight on every point, and you've lost him. Lost him utterly, because you've exceeded his reality. You got him reaching, and then you overwhelmed him. So the thing to do is to answer his questions in such a way as to keep him reaching. The search for Scientology would be simply a man's search of reachingness, how to reach further and further and find it safer and safer. And all of a sudden, he goes up in ability and up in skill. Now, in HAS co-audit, there's a new formula of how you establish what to run in the co-audit unit. One, find out what the person thinks is wrong with him. Obviously, he doesn't have to reach very far to find something wrong with him. He's liable to tell you anything, don't you see? You don't care what he tells you. Ask the person what he thinks is wrong with him. Ask him in a friendly way, non-critical. Then convert whatever answer he gives you into a terminal by asking him what terminal would represent that. Take any terminal he gives you and run overt with hole straight wire on it, and you've got the case made. 1, 2, 3. I'll say it again rapidly. Find out anything he thinks is wrong with him or her. Find any terminal this person supposes represents that wrongness in any way that you wish to ask this, and then run overt with hold straight wire on that. And you got it made every time. You yourself would have to be very maladroit to miss it. Because if the fellow said, there is nothing whatsoever wrong with me, there never has been and there never will be, you've still been given. What person would represent that? He says, my father. You say, good, overt, with hole, straight wire, father. The person cannot help but answer the question. You've certainly got satisfied customers. As soon as that one is flat, go through the same routine again. You flatten the first one. The doctor says, well, it's flat, flat. And he's just repeating it now. Feels fine about it. All right. Just ask him, well, what do you think's wrong with you? The person says, well, now I found out that I'm pretty poor. I'm just poor all the time. I'm just poor all the time. If I had more money, why, I would not be poor. This is a wonderful cognition. You say, good. Now, who would represent that? Who would represent a very poor person? Oh, very poor person. I don't know very many poor people. None except my Aunt Grace. My Aunt Grace. Yeah, she was sure poor. Good, overt with whole straight wire, Aunt Grace. Pan out every time. But more importantly, the people would know they were improving, but they'd also know that the instructor was a ruddy genius. How could he keep picking these things out of the air all the time? Because they wouldn't take any responsibility for having told you. No, the way you get cases running is to get them to reach. But, of course, they have to reach right at the inception when they come in the direction of Scientology. And once they have reached, don't overwhelm them. Keep them reaching. And if you keep them reaching, why, you'll wind up with the world clears. And if you don't keep them reaching when they ask you the first lead-in and so forth, we won't wind up with the world clears. They'll all be totally overwhelmed with axioms 1 to infinity recited at high speed in Gaelic. Thank you.